Hello, hello! Here we are back again at Dubai Watch Week, and we are the
Loom
Plotters.
Oh,
who's that?
I sounded a bit different today.
I have suddenly gained an Indian accent.
Well, you were born in India.
I was. I was actually born in New Delhi. I don't know if many of our Loom Plotter followers know that, but yes, I was. Now, we actually have a honorary Loom Plotter joining us. You will hear a lot from him during the upcoming episodes because he was integral in helping set up and joining us on some of our interviews that we did.
In some of the interviews we had, he literally saved our ass.
Big time. You will see this in the upcoming Laurent Ferrier interview.
Without
him, we would have looked like absolute idiots.
Yes. Which we do in any case every now and then. But he saved us from one more of these. So
exactly.
That's great.
And let's introduce him.
Yeah.
What is your name?
My name is Rajiv.
And tell us a few words about yourself, including, we could also say, what is on your wrist?
Yes, what is on your wrist?
On my wrist, I've got a Cartier Tank Normal, the Platinum Edition with the bracelet, which is a limited edition of 100 pieces, which I had purchased this year. This watch was launched during Watches and Wonders. And I had an eye for this watch, and I was just very fortunate to get this watch.
It's absolutely stunning.
Yes, and that also disqualifies you from being a Loom Plotter, because that is such a big heavy hitter. Where do you go from there? I mean, this is a stunning watch, and it's one of these watches that makes you just doubt yourself, because once you hold it in your hand and it weighs like as much as 4 watches.
Yeah.
And it just looks so elegant.
Do you know the weight of it?
Unfortunately, I don't.
You don't? So we need to bring a scale next time. We'll figure it out.
It's just amazing.
Is there an app for that? I can download. There is a touch center scale on the iPhone, but.
No, I don't know. But it's a fantastic watch. So
thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what are you wearing, Martin?
I am wearing also a Platinum Tank. No, I'm just kidding. I have a stainless steel. Boo. No. Reverso monophase. Is there anything
elegant,
else to say about this?
It's a reverso.
It's a classic reverso.
I always feel like I want a reverso. And then when I look at them and put it on my wrist, I think, yeah, it's nice. And then I speak to my wife and she says, it's an old man's watch. And I was like, nah, but I like it.
I am an old man in here.
Exactly. I should tell my wife that. Basically, you're married to an old man now, so it's okay.
Well, your opinion will change about the reverso.
I think this is one that you grow into, and I bought it early. In 20 years' time, I will still have it, and I'll be like, now is the time.
No. I think there is one in my future watch collection. There will be one. I'm wearing the Moser Heritage Dual Time at the moment. So.
And we ran into a friend of ours who was also wearing the exact same watch.
See, and that's the thing. I mean, according to the Milan brothers that I asked about it, we have about 200 of these watches made so far. It's not a limited edition, but they said, yeah, we have made, I think, one run of 200, and we might make another run. We don't know yet, right? So you think, well, I think here in Dubai, I know, I think, about 5 of these watches already. It's like, wow.
And you mentioned when you purchased it.
Yeah.
The gentleman that had it, you bought it secondhand.
My friend Mazen has one, and then it's, of course, Nico has one, I have one, and then I think it's 2 other people that I can't remember their names, but I think I've seen that as well. So, yeah, there's quite a few around even in Dubai. Yeah?
I think it's because of the burgundy dial.
It's lovely.
It's like lovely. And even the numbers.
The kudu strap is.
These indices.
Meanwhile.
The indices are like, it's got that Russian vibe, so which is why.
And this is exactly what Benoit Metianis from Resonance told us just now.
Yeah,
are you wearing a Russian watch?
A Ruski watch. Yeah, and it's these are actually a ceramic filled with super luminova.
Wow.
So they glow at night. It's really cool, pretty nice, actually.
Yeah, and for me, I've said this 1,000 times, I'm saying 1,001 time. What I love about it is the hidden, quote unquote, hidden, you know, blending in GMTN. It's so cool.
Yeah. That
you
it can hide it. Under the hour
And
hand,
I showed it to my brother, who is a big fan of Moser. And I said, oh, it's a dual time. He goes, what do you mean? Like, look, there's a GMT hand. He's like, where? Look closer. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's super cool.
It's really cool. I like it.
It is.
Anyhow, so that's the watch for today. So, yeah, Rajiv has helped us so much in our interview so far. He has given us so much more smart, knowledgeable questions to ask to our interviewers, and has asked these questions himself.
Well, he also
himself,
walks
obviously.
Up to people and says, "Do you mind if we have an interview?"
Yeah.
And I think Ralph and I are too shy for this.
Yeah, and obviously Rajiv brings another set of contacts with him. He's buddies with Waco, and he's knows a lot of people in the industry. So that's always very helpful for us too. So it's
we couldn't
be happier to have him with us.
Thank you very much.
So it's cool.
It's actually for me, it's an honor to be with you guys at Loom Plotters. I've been following you guys for the last 3 months, and it's been, and even your podcast has gone from strength to strength. I think over a period of time,
weakness to weakness.
I think your podcasts have just the quality of your podcasts have improved a lot in the last 2 or 3 months, and which is why for me, when I'm driving around, Loom Plotters is generally the channel that I listen to.
We appreciate it. It's so nice to hear, and ultimately we make it because we like talking about watches, and we're always happy to hear that people actually listen to it, because in our minds we're the only ones listening to ourselves talk.
We are still humbled that people actually listen to our ramblings. But yeah, that's really nice.
Yes, it is. And we appreciate it.
Let's do this now. We are sitting here in front of the press center outside. The weather is lovely. It's finally good temperature outside. It was a bit humid earlier. So we are happy sitting outside, enjoying ourselves. No loud music playing for the moment, so we are good. And we wanted to recap actually yesterday, because we haven't done that before. It's just for your information, 5 o'clock in the evening.
We want to talk about day two.
And we still have so many things to do.
Let's kick it off. What did we start with? We started with nothing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yesterday we had obviously the
rain, a little bit of rain.
Our interviews were unfortunately a bit postponed.
A bit canceled.
A bit canceled, you could say. Yeah, a bit canceled, yeah.
But we hopefully will make up for that. We did have one with Mr. Kenichi Maeda from Grand Seiko. We've since talked to him. Hopefully we will get the interview with him later on this weekend. What did we do?
So we talked in the beginning with Tim Mosso. We talked to Waco. We talked to Adrian from Bark and Shack.
Andrew from Talking Hands.
Yeah, Andrew Morgan.
Yes.
We talked to James Dowling. I actually dragged him to give watch advice to two ladies that asked me for watch advice. So I just handed them over to James Dowling. He gave good advice. We had two interesting interviews. Tobias Küffer was chief marketing officer.
He was a sales director.
For Norcane watches, and
yes,
we had a very,
absolute
very nice
guy. Interview. I mean, he was just such a nice guy.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to him. Then we had a long interview with Mubarak from the Opto Watch Company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then when the day came to an end,
Before we went to that, we went to a little seminar, a little talk. Yes, we went to a talk with both James Dowling and Tim Mosso.
Yeah, and they had a small discussion.
Obsessive compulsive collecting or something
disorder.
Like this.
Obsessive collective disorder.
Collecting disorder.
Something along these lines.
Yeah. So they had two different viewpoints of purging your collection versus hoarding, or maybe
And James Dowling admits to having 150 plus watches sitting in a safe. Meanwhile, Tim Mosso says he only has a few pieces.
But isn't that what I think? Let's talk about that for a minute if you can. I was thinking, well, I always have this deep respect for people who have, like he said, if you're only a collector if you have a theme, right? So, for example, if he says, I want to collect all the Rolex.
The watches that made companies go bankrupt.
For example.
And that was a great
one,
example.
One theme, right? The watch that made, bankrupted a company or something. Interesting theme for a collection. Or all 1970s Oyster Quartz Rolexes that came out.
Yeah.
And then he said, once I finish that collection, then I can put them in my safe and move on to the next. And I think,
but why is it finished?
Yeah, because that's his
his
identified theme, right?
Yeah.
And I'm always looking at my collection or even my friends' collections, and I don't have these kind of themes.
No.
So in his definition, we are not collectors. We have
correct.
Multiple watches, but we are not necessarily collectors, as in there is no theme to it. We want to have different watches for different use cases, but it doesn't mean it's a collection.
In my mind, it's also not correct to do this. I started this. I mentioned this. My first watch was a Tag Heuer Aqua Racer.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It was cheap. It was a Timepiece 360. I bought it. Then I knew the brand. So what was my second watch? A Carrera. Because in my mind, I am now a Tag Heuer collector. But ultimately, this was not, for me, the right choice.
Mm.
So then I wanted to experience other brands and branch out. So in my collection, it's a very broad collection of multiple brands. And I still feel that, I've mentioned, I don't look at myself as a collector. I look at myself as a watch enthusiast.
You're right.
In this case, the James Dowling philosophy is correct.
Yeah, so maybe it's true. I mean, I know that Rajiv, for example, has a specific one or two models in mind that he thinks once he acquired them, you will feel complete and satisfied. Not so sure if I would say that about me, because whenever I get one watch that I think that's it, that's my Grail watch, and that changed so much over the years, that's it, and I stop collecting. But then, obviously, it opens up other things, right? So.
Right. My strategy is I won't say a strategy. I always look at, this is something which I've learned over a period of time. I've had a few Zenith watches, and that's when I realized that end of the day, there's no point having so many watches of one brand, with the exception of an odd Rolex. Rolex is that one brand where you would want to have all the complications. You want a GMT, you want a Diver, you want a chronograph, you want a annual calendar.
And it's so funny because Rolex is one of these brands that anyone, you could start today, first watch you see, and I'm like, I want Rolex.
Yeah.
Then you could be into, like James Dowling, down the rabbit hole for 70 years of collecting, and still want Rolex. It transcends boundaries.
So Rolex is that odd exception. But otherwise, most of my watches, I kind of stick to one watch, one brand. And like, for example, for Grand Seiko, I initially had the Snowflake. But the moment I saw the Omi Watari, I got rid of my Snowflake and then I bought the Omi Watari.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's the kind of strategy that I kind of build on. So it, in a way, I have each Grail watch of each brand.
Yeah.
And then I stick to it. And
do you ever go into a second or third watch from a brand, or do you?
Which is why I had that with Zenith, and I changed my strategy. I realized there's no point having multiple watches. Like IWC. I had the IWC Pilot AMG Mercedes.
The big Pilot.
The Pilot, the 41. It was a 41.
Okay, it's not the big Pilot.
It's not the big Pilot.
Not the new one, not the 43 AMG Patronus.
No, it's the 41. One. The one which was launched 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Or rather last year. I let it go because I wanted the Ingenieur.
But does the Ingenieur sum up what is IWC? And this is the issue for me. There are brands where they have multiple watches.
Yeah.
With Grand Seiko, you could argue, a lot of people argue, Hi-Beat, Quartz, Spring Drive.
Yes.
Right? Those are the three. And by having your one Spring Drive, you're not necessarily complete. And this is the issue that I had with my Rolex. I had the Sub. Then I was like, you know what? I could really go for a Datejust. Got the Datejust. Well, you know, I really like the size of the Datejust, but the tooly look of the Sub, I'll get an Explorer 36. And, you know, you just kind of keep doing this and you fall into this trap.
There's lots of options in the Rolex catalog that you really, really, you know, and once you're hooked on Rolex, I think, well, it's hard to go elsewhere because it's also so easy to swap out because you get mostly what you paid back if you're lucky. If you didn't buy for astronomical prices, you are actually quite okay. So it's easy to say, okay, I trade this in and or trade up, right? Mm-hmm. I move up the chain. And it's hard when, I feel it's hard once you start with Rolex, not to buy another one.
Yeah, it's like cocaine. Yeah. They just want to reel you in and keep you.
Yeah, it's generally a person who first buys Rolex will only focus on AP or Patek as their mainstay watches. They won't go and explore or enjoy the other watch
brands.
Well,
we just heard this from Christie's. They mentioned this too, right?
Yeah.
80% of their sales is AP, Patek, and Rolex.
Yeah.
Which he said mostly the people that are collecting these will not go and buy themselves a Breguet or a Blancpain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The people who buy Breguet, Blancpain, these kind of people, I think these are watch connoisseurs that love the complications. Obviously, also the design. I mean, this is all very subjective, right? I mean, certain Blancpains speak to specific people. Some people, you know, prefer the Submariner. Some people just hate that design and want a Blancpain 50 Fathoms because that's what they like more. Because it's a more, maybe delicate, maybe a bit more, not less toolish, a bit
nuanced,
more elegant brand or something. Yeah, it's just a different ball game.
But
right?
by that same thought, you told me this morning, Rajiv, that you have a thing for weird bracelet watches.
Yes.
Therefore, you are a collector of weird bracelet watches, even if they're from different brands.
Yes.
Right? These are all collections?
Correct.
That could be a theme. That could be totally a theme for a collection.
Another theme is dials. I generally have different types of dials, like an enamel. I have sunburst or any of these other dials. The colors are all generally different. So which is why I try to keep it different and unique in my collection. So when I see something which is very similar, then I kind of move on and kind of offload those.
I feel like all of my watches would look exactly the same to you, like all like either silver dial or black dial, and that's it.
Yeah.
I had so many blue dial watches that I thought, well, that's it. I mean, that's my theme then. I just love blue dial watches, right? From different brands. You know, I had the Black Bay 58 in blue. I had the Blue Seamaster 300. Professional. I had the Blancpain 50 Fathoms Blathyscarf in blue. I had the Blue Oyster Perpetual. I had, and so on. It's just like blue, 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 blue.
Yeah, because I think blue was the in thing, right? At that time. At that point
of
time.
I still ignoring like the blue. In thing. Blue is just a cool color.
Yeah, which is why I meant.
The in thing was in for a short period of time. It was big. Yeah. But blue has historically been a very popular dial color.
I think it's timeless, relatively.
It is. It is timeless. Absolutely. Look at the snowflake.
Yeah, it's way better than the black, right? So
that one watch, there are watches where this is not always true. So let's not always say that blue beats black. But
so, gentlemen, I know we are again in the full stream of things, but we have another
event. But before we do that event, we have to say the last thing
about one thing.
So, we will all talk about this. I will start and then you will continue because I feel like we have to build it up. It was the biggest thing to ever happen to any of us. So we had an interview with, the last thing of the day was an interview with Pierre Biver, which is Jean-Claude Biver's son, regarding their new watch brand, Biver Watches. So we went there. It was a 6 p.m. interview. We wait. No one. Well, we were told he didn't even come to Dubai, he must have canceled.
Unfortunately, not well, yeah. So,
we pack up, we leave. And then what happened, Ralph?
Well, I got a frantic call saying like, hey, I got another beaver. I got another beaver here who was willing to do the interview. So we had...
Is it his mother? Is it his wife? Who can it be?
Is it his son, son-in-law or whoever it is? We thought like, okay.
We'll take it.
We dashed back with our stuff under our arms.
And with a 1% hope that it's going to be the man, the myth, the legend himself, JCB.
Yeah, there he was, waiting in the booth for us.
Trying to book his return flight on his phone.
No, he was busy. And we set up very quickly. I was very nervous to make sure that I actually pressed the record button.
For all intents and better purposes, we were shitting our pants.
Yes. I mean, there we have him. I mean, directly in front of us in a like 3-square-meter room or something and just talking directly to him. And I think it couldn't have run better.
No,
we had
a
fantastic interview with him, I think.
In Jean-Claude's words, perfect.
Perfect. yes.
And even the ladies in the reception of the press center
said...
We asked afterwards. He looked really, really satisfied and happy, and he doesn't usually look
said,
like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. We said, okay, well, first they said he was smiling when he left. And we're like, well, does he smile when he leaves other interviews? Because he could be smiling for everyone. And she said, no, this is the happiest we've seen him in a while.
Wow.
Should we talk about it now?
About
your
what?
Blessed...
My blessed watch. Yeah, we can go into details. But yeah. My watch must have probably gone up 3 times in value just because of this interview. Because when he saw this Blancpain, he took it, he marveled at it. He really was very excited about it.
He opened the case back.
He was really happy to see this watch. I was very surprised about this because he must have seen a lot in his life. Right? And then he gave it...
A big kiss.
A big smooch. So now my watch is kissed by Jean-Claude Bivet. So I ask for more, but what do I do? I mean, I can't wear it anymore, right? So I have to put it in a vitrine somewhere.
You seal it hermetically?
Yeah, it's amazing. But, yeah.
All right. On that bombshell, there's nothing we can say top that ever. Jean-Claude Bivet kissing your watch.
Yeah, exactly. What a crazy, crazy thing to
happen. We left and we were just astounded that just happened.
Like school kids just, jumping around saying that this is one of the best things that happened.
You saw our idol. Yeah, we were starstruck. Yeah. We were happy, shaky legs. It was amazing. Yeah.
And you will hear this interview at some point in the future?
Absolutely. I think it will be fantastic and looking forward to share it with you guys.
Yes. And tomorrow we will come back and have the review of today tomorrow.
At some stage, exactly.
Yes.
But we still have a lot to do today, so we have to get going. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Bye-bye from me.
Ciao.
Take care.
All righty. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. See how when we just it's us, it's so much different. 'Cause this